work on it to send the video to the channels and a news agency.
Every day, Fadi sits and watches dozens of gruesome videos, like this one that came across his desk a few weeks ago. It's a crude minute. A shaky camera shows the dead bodies of a dozen or so men on a black and white tile floor. A piece of paper with a number is attached to each body's chest. Other men mill around, peering at the faces of the dead. Curious, perhaps, trying to find a friend. One man wails in agony. Fadi played the video a few times, but he didn't look too closely. Then, as always, he sent the link around. A few hours later, the phone rang.
At 5 o'clock, my mother called me.
Fadi's mother is still in Syria.
She asked me first, are you alone? I said no. Are you with your friend? I'm say yes, Yani, I'm with my friend.
Good, she said. I'm sending you a link by Facebook. You must watch it. It was the same video Fadi had seen earlier in the day. But this time, he looked closer. He focused on the faces of the dead men. Fadi realized one of the dead men was his father. He had a bullet hole in his head.
What did you do when you realized it? I mean,
all the time we work on this media, on this videos. But when I'm seeing my father in this video, I'm freeze.
You just froze. You froze.
Fadi's mother told him 2 days before his father had been detained by security forces. His body was later tossed in the street. Activists found him, shot the video, buried him and the other dead men, and sent word to Fadi's family. Residents in Fadi's area say his father is one of hundreds of people who've been executed in recent months. Fadi says the whole thing is still unreal. He says his family has decided to put off their mourning until their work is done.
Now I'm not afraid if I die, I'm not afraid, Yani, because all of us is the same, Yani. All the people need freedom, and all the people work to take it.
So for now, Fadi will keep sending out videos, sometimes going back to Syria to shoot the videos. And his father, Mohiedin Zidane, will remain another number, a 55-year-old man, a lawyer, killed in September 2012. Kelly McEvers, NPR News, Beirut.
This is Audie Cornish with some information that might surprise you. The folks at NPR Audience Research recently asked a group of NPR listeners what was most important to them in this year's election coverage. And the number one request? More than anything, listeners want NPR reporters to fact-check claims and statements made by politicians. This year, a record amount is being spent on political ads, and candidates are making new speeches every day, sometimes every hour. Which statements are true? Which are false? Listeners want to know.
In the last 29 months...
Last night, former President Bill Clinton delivered a speech remarkable both for its eloquence and for the sheer quantity of facts it contained.
Last night, it was his running mate Paul Ryan's turn, and in his speech, Ryan made a number of statements that have made this a busy day for fact-checkers.
A busy day for fact-checkers is a normal day for reporters at NPR and for our partners at PolitiFact, a news organization that's working with NPR to sort out the truth this busy campaign season. Fact-checking is hard work. It's time-consuming and expensive. It requires teams of journalists working full-time, and it takes your support. Make a contribution to your station, or better yet, become a sustaining member today. With your help, we can sort out the truth in this hectic election season. And thanks.
No question, it is a hectic election season. There's a lot worthy of covering, a lot of races that are of importance to you, and there's a lot in terms of issues and ideas being expressed by candidates and by pundits, and you try and distill all of that as best as you can, and still there are more issues and ideas to explore. That's what makes public radio so great. Public media provides you with a place where you can hear depth and context and thought beyond the rhetoric that you're going to hear over the course of campaigns through advertisements and on maybe cable news where it's more focused on opinion. You know, it reminds me of something that Steve Inskeep said earlier today when we were talking on Focus. He mentioned the idea that there are too many people out there when it comes to the reporting that they do or the journalism that they do, It has more to do with what they have to say and their opinions, and there's not enough listening. There's not enough listening going on. Well, that's something that we hold very sacred, the idea of listening to a wide range of diverse voices throughout our country and throughout the world, examining and exploring ideas and issues and thoughts in ways that you just don't hear anywhere else. And it's because of this system that we've devised. It's because you are able to sustain this service that we can do that. You provide $100 here, $50 there, $1 a day here or there, or $1,000, whatever's in your budget. But thousands of your friends and neighbors also pool their resources together, and the end result is we have all the money that it takes to bring you programs like Morning Edition and All Things Considered that do that in-depth exploration, to bring you programs like Focus with thoughtful conversations, Fresh Air is like that, Talk of the Nation, which is coming up next, and this program, The Afternoon Magazine, where we provide you with sort of an hour's worth of rundown of what's happened so far today and what's in store in the hours ahead. And we, of course, provide you with material from NPR and the BBC. Well, that costs some money. We write checks out to NPR. We write checks to the BBC, and that's how we have the access to the content that we bring on the air. We're able to write those checks because you send in a few dollars. So that's why we do come to you a few times a year and ask you to make a contribution in support of this station. This is one of those moments. And in fact, today we have an important goal to meet of $13,000 raised. I know we can get there with your help. The phone number to call to make a contribution in support of this station is 217-244-9455. That's 217-244-9455, or you can make a secure contribution at willpledge.org. Consider maybe a $120 gift, just $10 a month, in support of the news and information that you rely on from WILL AM 580. Think about how much value you get from that $10 a month. We like to say you'll hear your dollars at work all year long in the news and information that we provide here at WILL, as well as the news and information that you receive from National Public Radio and from the BBC. We really are able to cover the world, stories as far away as halfway around the world, like this morning's discussion about Karachi, or as close as your backyard, like some of the stories that we just had in the Illinois Public Media newscast just a little while ago. This information, it does come with a cost. We have to pay for reporters, we have to pay for producers and editors and technical directors and engineers, and so there's personnel, and then there's the equipment itself, which frankly is not cheap, and hopefully is not something we have to replace all that often, but when we do, well, it's a pretty penny. So we try to be very judicious in the dollars that we spend. The end result is that we provide you with what I think is a pretty vibrant service and one worthy of supporting. So I hope you will make that contribution of $10 a month right now at 217-244-9455. You can put that contribution on your Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or American Express. Or if you'd prefer, we'd be happy to mail you an invoice and you can pay by check, whatever's easiest for you. But do make that contribution now at 217-244-9455 or online at willpledge.org. Thanks so much.
WILL programming is made possible by Columbia Street Roastery, offering over 30 varieties and blends of whole bean or ground coffee at 24 East Columbia in Champaign. Coffee, tea, and chai are available from their retail store, in local restaurants, and through Columbia Street Roastery's coffee service. More information is available at 352-9713.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 15th of October, 2012. It's the birthday of the poet Virgil, born near Mantua, Italy, in 70 BC, who set about to write his epic poem, The Aeneid. He'd been working on it for 11 years, went to Greece, caught a fever, and died before he could finish. He asked that the incomplete poem be burned, but the Emperor Augustus ordered it preserved, and it became the basis of standard curriculum in Roman schools. It was on this day, 1764, Edward Gibbon, in Rome, walking around the ruins of the Capitol, got the idea to write his book, actually six volumes, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. Edward Gibbon, who became known as the first modern historian because he tried to write objectively, relied heavily on primary source documents, and made extensive use of footnotes. It's the birthday of the man who said we should consider every day lost on which we have not danced at least once. That was Friedrich Nietzsche, born in the Prussian village of Rücken in 1844. We don't know him so much for his dancing ability as for the fact that he said God is dead. Actually, what he said was God is dead and we have killed him. And it's the birthday of P.G. Wodehouse, born in Guildford, England, 1881, raised by a series of aunts. Could not go to college because his father had gone bankrupt, so he got a job as a bank clerk and started writing humorous stories. Wodehouse said, "My total inability to grasp what was going on at the bank made me something of a legend." Went into journalism, and as a journalist, he first came to the United States, fell in love with America. He said being there was like being in heaven without going to all the bother and expense of dying. Moved to Greenwich Village, 1909, started writing stories for the Saturday Evening Post about the manservant Jeeves, who is always saving his employer, Bertie Wooster, from some sort of disaster. People who knew Wodehouse said he was extremely shy and rather dull, never that funny in person. But in the course of his life, he wrote almost 100 books of fiction, wrote lyrics for 28 musicals. He said, "I just sit at a typewriter and curse a bit." Here's a poem for today by Carl Dennis entitled Tattoo. If the body is the house of the soul, what's wrong with a little home decoration, more permanent than the drapes in the parlor or the fabric on the dining room chairs? A forearm, say, adorned with a tropical flower or with a palm tree under a deep blue sky, suggesting the body is glad to recall its stay in Eden, whether or not the soul regards that episode as relevant now. Or consider the young waitress who served you lunch just an hour ago, how her sleeveless blouse revealed a small heart on her shoulder, inscribed with two names, Dave and Gretchen, under a sprig of lilac. No need to assume she's failed to imagine a time when a boyfriend more congenial wakes up beside her, only to be reminded there was once a Dave who was all she wanted. Could be she wants to send a reminder to the Gretchen she may become, not to forget the girl who believed that holding on